You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA, news and commentary.
Welcome back to the Larry Connors Show. This is Sarah Moore filling in for Larry today. And I left you on a bit of a cliffhanger that last segment, talking about good versus evil and what if it's evil versus evil over there in the East. Well, what did I mean by that? I mean that it's not as simple as telling the stories that we hear in fairy tales. That there's always a good guy and there's always a bad guy. Perhaps there's manipulation. Perhaps there is greed. Perhaps there is corruption happening even in Ukraine. Now, that doesn't mean that we don't stop everything to do when war strikes. That we don't lose our morals just because of the existence of evil in other places. No, it only emboldens us to fight smarter, fight harder, be more courageous ourselves. Now, we've talked about how the Biden administration has responded to Ukraine, but we haven't highlighted, quite enough, to my liking, how the elites have responded themselves. In particular, I'm thinking of John Kerry. Yes, the multimillionaire, the private jet-owning John Kerry, the climate change envoy for the Biden administration. You know, his posture on all of this, while thousands are dying from Russian missiles and bombs in the suburbs of Ukraine. By the way, why did Biden finally call Putin a war criminal? Well, one of the reasons could be that Russia has actually been using vacuum bombs, a thermobaric weapon that is typically more devastating than traditional bombs, because it absorbs the oxygen in a given space to cause such a significant and devastating blast that it's actually capable of vaporizing humans. That's why those aren't really allowed. That's why it's a deep, sincere violation. That's why it is a war crime. Anyway, so all this is going on in Ukraine. Ukrainians are suffering. You've heard the maternity hospital was bombed. The theater was bombed where innocent civilians, of course, they're all innocent, innocent civilians were seeking refuge. Meanwhile, Biden's concern is the same as John Kerry's concern. And this is where they kind of reveal their hand once more, because John Kerry is lamenting that Russian President Vladimir Putin might no longer be his partner in reducing global warming. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? You're going to lose focus, Kerry frets. You're going to lose big country attention because they, I think that's us, will be diverted. And Putin could have damaging impact on not being a global warming partner. So this global moralist, that's what we like to call him, that's what Victor Davis Hanson calls him, which if you haven't read his article yet, check it out, goes through the impact of over 650 Russian missiles that have hit, drilled Ukrainian buildings and tore apart children. Climate change moralists love humanity. This is what Victor Davis Hanson says. They love humanity so much in the abstract that they must shut down its life-giving gas, coal, and oil in the concrete. Global moralists value humans so little that they don't worry in the here and now that ensuing fuel shortages and exorbitant costs cause wars, spike inflation, and threaten people's availability to travel or keep warm. That's where you hear why you hear some of the progressive elites making jokes about, you know, I'm willing to pay higher taxes if that's the cost of if fighting back against evil, I can drive a little less. Well, that's not how the lower class, the underprivileged, the poor feel about it. I'm sorry. The Biden administration, again, has stopped all oil and gas production in the Anwar region of Alaska. in order to protect the porcupine caribou, as we highlighted before. But it's leveraging lending agencies not to finance oil and gas drilling. So now gas is headed over $5 a gallon, as we've already highlighted. But to put this whole thing another way, what John Kerry said, what Biden actually believes, is to ask the question, when a selfish theory hits deadly reality, who loses? It's all the American people. Don't be a loser. Don't support these terrible policies. And don't tolerate it. You know, over the past few weeks, we saw the People's Convoy traveling across the country to fight back against mandates and terrible policies. Maybe we should give that another look.
Larry Connors, USA, news and commentary.
If you have mold in your home, your family can get very sick. You need to call Wellington Environmental. Realtors, even hospitals and doctors call Wellington to solve mold issues. A Belleville homeowner discovered mold. Good thing he called Wellington. The mold is gone, and Wellington's new chemical process saved him $3,500. A university was facing some major mold issues. They called Wellington. Issue solved. The university saved $40,000. Wellington also helps research and test new products to deal with mold. Call 314-644-4930. 644-4930. A-rated by the BBB, Missouri and Illinois. Say you heard about Wellington on Larry Connors USA. Save $100 on any mold treatment or $50 on mold sampling. 644-4930. Be well with Wellington Environmental.
My sponsors keep this program on the air, so my thanks to John Beal Roofing, covering homes and businesses throughout the Midwest. Best quality, lowest price. So when you need a roof, remember this sponsor for this program, John Beal Roofing. 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
I'm Sarah Moore, and this is the Larry Connors Show. And what were we talking about? Hypocrisy. The hypocrisy of the elites, the governing elites of America. Now, Joe Biden lifted U.S. sanctions on the Russian-German Nord Stream 2 pipeline designed to provide green Germany with loathsome but life-saving natural gas, meanwhile canceling the Keystone XL pipeline in the United States. That's one of the reasons why Spire Energy has sent a note out saying that it's going to lose thousands of customers, that it will cut off thousands of customers because it won't be able to supply. While Biden doesn't like the idea of Germany burning carbon fuel, or Putin reaping enormous profits from Berlin's self-created dependency, or Germans importing liquefied natural gas from America, Biden also doesn't like the idea of forcing German families to turn off their thermostats in midwinter when there is a Russian-fed war not far from Germany's borders. And here at home, you know best, Biden gets even crazier as our enemies around the world reap huge profits from record high oil and gas prices. Did Biden ask Alaska, North Dakota, or Texas to ramp up production? No. As we've highlighted, he is asking Americans to suffer from the self-created energy crisis. Again, hypocrisy. When we step back and look at what's going on all over the globe, when we look at the oil-rich Venezuelan dictatorship, the narco-terrorist state that wars on its own people and neighbors, when we look at the UK now visiting Saudi Arabia to open up opportunities, we see a constant theme that the elites want us to live one way, but they want others to live differently. Because if it's not big government telling me what I can and can't do with my life, with my body, it's big tech, it's big business. Or it's the Gates Foundation. Why do I say that? Well, driving down to Florida last week with the family for a would-be spring break, driving using all that gas. I'm not even going to tell you how much it cost to drive a minivan, a Pacifica, down to Florida and back. I also had the opportunity to pick up a couple newspapers from what I thought would be a more positive view of the country, being the state of Ron DeSantis currently. But instead, what I found on the front page of 4 to 5 different newspapers was branding for the heroes of the global elites. One in particular stuck out like a sore thumb because it was not just an article, but the main headlining article on the USA Today's paper last week. It was the story of the one and only Melinda French Gates. Now, intentions are one thing. She wants to make sure that women have their full voice. But when you're pouring millions and millions of dollars into investments that assume women want to live a certain way, well, that's when you've gone too far. And I don't want to tear her apart. That's not my way. But I do want to pick apart the strategy and the tactics of the global elites, what they're doing with their money, what they are trying to get us to believe and trying to get us to do. Yes, it's another form of manipulation, and it's another form of deceit. A couple quotes from Melinda Gates and this interview they had with her as one of 11 honorees that the USA Today is going to highlight this year. First, she says, her goal is really to create societal change for women and people of color. I really feel like we need to accelerate their power and their influence. And I feel like right now during the pandemic, we're seeing finally in the United States, jobs starting to come back. I wonder what data she's looking at when millions and millions of jobs still remain open, when millions and millions of businesses are still suffering from the terrible COVID policies from the Biden administration. So French Gates is no stranger to philanthropy and to money. In 2000, she helped create the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, a foundation I'm sure you've heard lots about over the years. They have worldwide impact with an endowment of nearly $50 billion. If I said millions before, that was a mistake. I'm reading it now, reading it to you live. $50 billion. Now, she and Bill divorced, as you well know, but she still remains very involved in the foundation. Here's a couple of things that she said. In the United States, she thinks that in just 50 or 60 years, we will have complete equality in this country. Now, I wonder what that means. I also wonder what it means for someone else to define that for me, for you. Because when you look at what they're measuring, what they're looking at, what they want is for their definition of family to be employed, for their definition of contraceptives to be held on to, for their view of sexuality, for their view of tolerance, for their ideologies to be the guiding American philosophy. If that were really to happen, if they were to be effective, that would ultimately do away with the American dream. Here's how she defines courage in what she's doing. Courage is knowing you're going to step into something really hard and you do it anyway, whether it's a difficult meeting or a courageous conversation, using your voice. That's what courage is, using your voice. Well, what she's forgetting is there is actually absolute truth. There is right and there is wrong. And it is wrong for someone to decide what someone else should do with their body. What else, what someone should do with her opinion of climate change. So I won't go into the details of her contraceptive strategy. But she does say that she believes in them, even though she's also Catholic, and that the Catholic Church doesn't necessarily condone condoms or contraceptives. So I just had to learn to go ahead and use my voice on what I knew to be true. Again, there you have it, relative truth. That is our ultimate threat. everything that we've been talking about today, the external threats, those are there. Those are real. But the greatest of threats, this is it. Relative truth. Relative moralism. Because when there is no good and when there is no evil, then we cannot exist. Then we cannot live into the truth of this beautiful American experiment. That is the scenario in which religion dies, civil society passes away, and this beautiful American dream becomes extinct. That's the worst case scenario. That's not going to happen because you're not going to let that happen. But why do I bring up what the global elites are up to? Well, because in short, while we're doing our jobs, while we're trying to figure out how to navigate inflation and getting gas at the grocery store, they're making global investments to try to undo the very way of living that we are trying to perpetuate in our families, in our children, in our communities. Even the Congo is not out of range for where they intend to make impact. In fact, a $4.6 million grant from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation was awarded in advancing their version of family planning and programming to go along with that in the Democratic Republic of Congo in Central Africa. So over the past few decades, they have continuously provided funding to Tulane to test innovative service delivery strategies because they think the birth rate in the Congo is too high. They think they should have a say, not just a say, control over the fertility rate. In the Congo, it happens to be 6.2 children per woman. That's the third highest fertility rate in the world. Well, they actually want to see that lowered, as they want to see it lowered in our own country. Now, do I think there's a ton of maliciousness behind what some of these elites are doing? Or do I think it's naivety? Do I think it's ignorance? It's really not my job to say. I don't know the condition of another human's heart. But I do know that the ramifications of these philosophies, ideas, and ideology are damaging. Physically, economically, but also spiritually. It's ours to resist, and it's ours to fight. Next up, next newspaper I made the mistake of picking up in Florida, where I thought we would get some good coverage, actually had to do with the legislation that Ron DeSantis and Florida legislators have been working on that you see has gotten a lot of headline news. That's because it's called the Don't Say Gay Bill, except that it's not called that. So this newspaper I pick up is actually the News Herald. It's part of the USA Today network. It's got a real ugly looking picture of DeSantis to make him look like a bad guy on the front page. And then the writing is exceptionally terrible because they failed to use a complete sentence with punctuation on the front page multiple times in a row. And the propaganda, the agenda-riddenness of the writing is undebatable. Here we go. I'm only going to give you a little bit. I won't make you suffer very long. But they talk about floor debates, abortion bans, and censorship of classroom discussions about sexual orientation. They became personal for some lawmakers. For Democrats who claim the poor, the marginalized, and disenfranchised as part of their constituency, ironically, the session was a bitter pill as the Republican-controlled legislature passed laws aimed at immigrants, LGBTQ youth, and other minorities. Now, forgive me, that is one sentence somehow. But the point is not the poor grammar, although it is egregious. The point is this, the framing, the left's framing of what is going on in Florida state legislature, but legislatures all over the country. It is a game. It is a marketing game. It is a messaging strategy because what's really going on, and you can check Cabot Phillips reporting on this from the Daily Wire, is that this House bill, 1557, a.k.a. the Don't Say Gay Bill, is actually not that at all. Governor Ron DeSantis and his Republican counterparts in the State House have officially made it illegal for teachers to say the word gay. That's how it's reported. But the story, the mainstream media's story, and the Biden administration's story is revealing because they failed to mention that the bill leaves out one very important word. A word it doesn't say at all, actually. That's the word gay. It's not mentioned once. Which is ironic, given the titling, the left's titling of the bill itself. But despite the left's breathless proclamations about the supposed horrors of this bill, HB 1557, the truth is far simpler. In reality, the bill is an act relating to parents' rights in education. While many on the left think parents shouldn't have much of a say in what's being taught in their kids' classroom, Republicans in Florida feel otherwise. Also, Republicans, conservatives in Virginia, as we saw in Glenn Youngkin's election. It's a response, it's a broad response to the woke gender ideology that's been flooding our schools, our public schools, even our private schools. They're siding with parents who are rightly concerned about the agenda being pushed on kids as young as 5 years old. We're talking pornographic literature that is becoming a part of the curriculum for these children. Thanks to remote learning bringing the classrooms to parents' living rooms, moms and dads got to see what was actually being taught. Moms and dads are angry. The mother bear, so to speak, has been poked. She is very angry, and she will not let this sit. So stay tuned and watch what's happening in Florida. Watch how this plays out, because it's not just going to happen in Florida. You know, because you're involved and you're paying attention. This is underway in many states. Moms in particular are joining together organically in grassroots ways and fighting back to let administrations, legislators, teachers, faculty know that what their child hears and learns and is taught matters to them. The truth.
Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
Welcome back, and thank you for listening. Thank you for being with us today. You know, I've made a mistake by not yet mentioning what's going on in the world of Kamala Harris, the vice president, because you've probably noticed, you're on to it, that things are changing for her. She's traveling more. She's losing members of her team left and right. What is actually going on here? Now, I subscribe to Politico's playbooks because I like to know what DC is saying about itself. Self-awareness is a funny thing. Some of us have it. Some of us are working on it. Some of us don't even try. But I'm interested in what Politico has to say about the swamp. And so here's what the West Wing playbook has. This is a report by Alex Thompson about the goings-on with Vice President Harris's cabinet. Her press shop has been going through a whole full-blown, full-scale makeover, and this overhaul is almost complete. After months filled with tough headlines, tisk tisk, Harris's comms director left in early November. Then her press secretary departed in December. Now, Deputy Press Secretary Sabrina Singh is leaving for the Defense Department. This has actually been confirmed by the vice president's office. Why is this happening? One of the four most senior communications officials that began with Harris, only one, Herbie Ziskind, is the remaining pawn person. The departures and the replacements amount to Harris resetting her press team under new communications director Jamal Simmons. The deputy comms director was close ties to the West Wing after previous stints, working for Ron Klain, blah, 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 blah. They're going all over the place. They're working for Pete on his presidential campaign. Why are they leaving? Could it be that Harris is actually a bit of a bully, a bit of a tough personality, someone that is complicated. Someone that it's tough to collaborate with, work with. Is it possible that working for her doesn't feel like working for the cause, ideologically, that they thought they believed in? I wouldn't be surprised. She's been doing more national media interviews. Again, you've noticed. At the one-year mark of the administration and after the State of the Union, she did ABC, NBC, CBS morning shows, a trifecta. Biden did a lot, often did, as president, as vice president as well. She's also sat down with PBS NewsHour, Face of the Nation, and Telemundo. It's almost like big media is trying to help her out. It's almost like everyone knows she's not doing a great job. It's almost like they're trying to cover for her. What do you think? What do you think? Well, I know what I got a kick out of, and that was Ben Shapiro's response to Biden's State of the Union. He called it his real State of the Union speech. I'm going to pull from parts of his transcript because, unlike the leadership that we've seen from Harris's office, we've got some real truth, some gold, in this real State of the Union. It reads like this. Ladies and gentlemen, we gather here tonight to mourn the state of our nation because this state of our nation is pathetic. And it is pathetic in the main because of the President of the United States. As it turns out, we all should have listened to Barack Obama. In 2020, former President Obama said something simple yet profound about his former vice president, a man he labeled his brother. He said, "Don't underestimate Joe's ability to F things up." Barack Obama was right. Joe Biden came into the office on the wings of eagles. He was handed a working vaccine and a distribution plan for that vaccine. He was handed an economy that had been placed into an artificial coma in order to prevent the spread of COVID. But that was about to rebound to record growth rates. He was handed a stable foreign policy, and he had been blessed with the unending bounty of sycophantic media coverage, welcoming him to the Oval Office with an approval rating of nearly 56%. Now, if you were listening earlier, you know that it is growth that he has now reached 42%. What did he do with all these advantages, competitive and comparative? Well, he presided over perhaps the worst first 14 months of any presidency since the Civil War. And unlike Abraham Lincoln, our current crisis is entirely man-made. Issue after issue. Joe Biden's not merely wrong, he's aggressively wrong. He's not merely foolish, he is stubbornly foolish. Joe Biden became president with one goal, to enshrine himself as the history of a great leader. Today we can say that he's one of the worst. For more of the transcript, go visit Ben Shapiro's website, Daily Wire. This guy's funny.
Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
Many car dealers are quick to sell you a car, but Ackerman Toyota knows that's just the beginning of your relationship. When it comes time for routine or special service work, others might be too busy. Not Ackerman Toyota. Hours and days to fit your schedule. Ackerman Toyota at Hampton, just north of Interstate 44. Ackerman Toyota for life.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
Welcome back to the Larry Connors Show. I'm Sarah Moore, filling in for Larry, and we've talked about just about every topic under the sun today. Everything from what the vice president is up to, the president trying to dissect their political plans and strategy for themselves, for their own party, trying to figure out what's really going on abroad. And now we've also covered global elites. What do they want our families to look like? How do they want us to live? How do they want us to vote? Well, we've got a really unique and wonderful guest on the show here today to talk to you about what we can do to procure and preserve the life we believe worth living, the way we believe worth living. And that happens to be J.P. DeGance. J.P. DeGance, thank you for joining us today.
Hey, Sarah. Awesome to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Yes. JP cut his teeth in politics and fundraising. Is that fair to say, JP? So you know a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. Fair to say. I came to Washington like a lot of people trying to save America. And God's providence knocked me on my head a few times and helped me understand that in a lot of ways, what's going on in politics is a reflection, obviously, of what's going on in the culture. A Texas Oil friend told me years ago that trying to change politics by focusing on politics alone is a little bit like trying to change the weather by playing with a thermometer. And I think there's some good Texas wisdom in that. But obviously, there's some, use a big word here, bilateral causality, the idea that both influence each other. And sometimes folks only think strategically about one, that is the political and public policy world, and just don't apply the same strategic insights into impacting the culture. And that became important for me and got me on a long journey that led me to writing the book Endgame.
That's exactly
and
right.
And founding the organization Communio.
That's exactly right. I remember a conversation with you, JP, once where you told me that culture is the playing field. And everything political happens on that field, but don't forget that culture is the playing field. So now, since those lessons learned early on, you've started an organization called Communio, which you continue to lead. You've published your first book, Endgame, The Church's Strategic Move to Save Faith and Family in America. Before we dive into it, where can folks find this book?
Yeah, they can go on to endgamebook.org. You can get it for the cheapest amount, endgamebook.org. And you can also, of course, get it on Amazon as well, and just type in Endgame, faith and family, those words, and it'll pop up in your search.
Right. Well, I'd encourage our listeners to go do that. We've been talking a lot, JP, today about decline, cultural decline, of course, political decline, moral decline. And as much as I'm trying not to be a fearmonger, like the opposition, as I would label the opposition, it's a little scary out there. It's looking a little frightening. Why did you choose to leave the world of politics to do what you're doing now? And what is the mission of Communio? Give us a little hope.
Yeah. Fundamentally, if we don't get the family right, nothing else matters. Okay. Mm-hmm. And over the last 60 years, I think you can identify any number of problematic trajectories of our country and the social sciences and political science, economics, what have you. It all is causally connected to the collapse of marriage and the family. And you've had a rise in kids raised in over the last 60 years in homes where mom and dad aren't continuously married. There's all sorts of things when that happens. There's a friend of mine used to say, when families fail, governments grow. And that's true. That's true. There's a man for many years who had been a prison chaplain noted to me that on Mother's Day, many Mother's Day cards go out, but on Father's Day, almost none go out. And and so whether you look at crime, whether you look at poverty, whether there's something that the social sciences call adverse childhood experiences, the more of these things that you have, the more likely you are to suffer from depression, suicidal ideation, to struggle, to wind up incarcerated. Certainly there are kids who grew up with married moms and dads who have adverse childhood experiences. There's no doubt about that. But generally speaking, if you grow up without a married mom and dad, you're categorically more likely to have many more adverse childhood experiences. And then that means you're going to be less likely to flourish as an adult. And so what's happening in our political dialectic in many ways, you're seeing play out what it has already played out in the home. And so it's incumbent on those who you know, understand and embrace the ideas of the American founding to understand that the American founding was built on top of some important pillars, some important ingredients, important preconditions, right?
Right. And, well, forgive me for putting of kind are, of a – oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah, no. I mean, at the end of the day, self-governance requires governance of the self.
And, right.
And that can only occur if that person is well-formed and the human capital is well-formed in the home. And so, yeah, for all those reasons, I began the work there, and we began to help pastors really understand that churches are actually the change agent there.
Right.
Lots of people have written about the doom and gloom around these trends, but not a lot of folks have been able to really try to articulate solutions and in ways that are data driven and show results, and that's what we do in Endgame.
Right. Well, speaking of data, and forgive me for putting more of a political lens on this, if only married voters were those that made up the Electoral College in 2020, Trump would have won in a landslide, right?
Obviously, Camino doesn't do any and isn't involved in the political process, but that is what public polling in terms of exit polling certainly revealed. Now, you can look at the trend and the family over the last number of decades, and you can certainly see that that certain constituencies benefit from it and others don't.
And
as you know, I'm going to speak to listeners who care about the future of our republic. I'm going to speak to listeners who are Christians. If we understand the centrality and importance of the family, I think I want to challenge all the listeners to ask themselves a question. How often do we ask? How often do I talk to my kids about, you know, getting on the best travel team, the best youth sports program, maybe getting great grades or getting into a great college, and numerically think about all those times, and then ask myself a question and on the other hand and say, how do I talk to my kids about dating well and forming healthy relationships and avoiding problematic decisions like living together before you're married, that sort of stuff. And I suspect the average parent talks about the first group of items far more frequently than the second group of items. And I think I want to challenge all of us that this is in this Mother Teresa famously said that if you want to save the world, go home and love your family. And this is one of the ways you can go home and love your family.
Right.
Start speaking into this now. We had done an experimental initiative, as you know, Sarah, in Jacksonville, Florida, worked with more than 50 different churches, evangelical churches, Baptist churches, Catholic parishes, and that group of churches moved 58,912 people through relationship education. We saturated the county with digital outreach, and we just found that the divorce rate plummeted 24%.
That's absolutely incredible. And it's interesting, especially, you know, when we're looking at our institutions across the country failing us and selling out for wokeism and liberal progressive ideologies, you know, the family unit and the church need to be the conduits to formation for the child, to share with them what absolute truth is and how to live into it. We've only got a few seconds left here, JP, but could you talk about where the end game brings us and what would you leave folks with?
Yeah, every church, the reality is relationship and relationship health and marital health is the great crisis of our time. The church can speak into that right now in a real way. We give how-tos on how to do it to evangelize, grow the church, and convert the world and influence positively your community and just by having healthy marriages, families, and healthy relationships. So go to endgamebook.org, and you can get that game plan, endgamebook.org.
Fabulous. Well, JP, you're the man. Thanks so much for being with us. Thanks for doing the work that you are doing. We need more of it. God bless you.
God bless. All right. Bye now.
Take care. Well, that's JP DeGantz. Go check out his work. It's phenomenal. We'll talk to you soon. Stay tuned for our last segment.
I don't endorse anyone unless I believe in them. So I can tell you with confidence and with personal knowledge, Rottner Pest Solutions will rid your home, your business, of pests. without any danger to your family or pets. Rottler, the only pest control company you need. Call for a free estimate. 877-ROTTLER, 877-ROTTLER, or go to rottler.com. Rottler Pest Solutions.
Well, I started out with $1 lone dollar, gambled with a man and I won me another, bought me a gun and I robbed my brother. I'm bad, but I don't care, boys. Gonna be a millionaire.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Welcome back. This is Larry Connors USA, and we are so happy to have you with us for this last and final segment. And as we head into the end of this hour, I wanted to leave you with a bit more of hope. I know J.P. DeGantz and his work at Communio is something worth exploring, but I also wanted to leave you with a story, one of courage, one of valor and honor, to give you a little bit of a different take on Russia and Ukraine, to see it through the eyes of an individual, not just a major media outlet, not just a journalist seeking high approval ratings. It's the story of a Canadian sniper who left his computer programmer job, his wife and year-old son, to cross the Ukrainian border at night to fight Russian invaders alongside other foreign volunteers. He's 40 years old, identified only as Wally to protect his family's safety, smart. And he's one of more than 20,000 foreign-born fighters who answered Ukrainian President Zelensky's call to fight Russia as part of Ukraine's International Legion of Territorial Defense. He says this, "I know it's just awful, but me in my head, when I see the images of destruction in Ukraine, it is my son that I see in danger and who is suffering." This is what Wally told the French publication, La Presse. "When I see a destroyed building, it is the person who owns it, who sees his pension fund go up in smoke. That's what I see." While I took this trip with three other former Canadian soldiers crossing from Poland into Ukraine on the 2nd of March, they saw Ukrainian refugees already fleeing towards the border checkpoint, crowding inside numerous buses and walking in the cold, well bundled in winter clothing. Upon finally meeting the Ukrainian forces, they greeted his group with hugs, handshakes, and Ukrainian flags. "They were so happy to have us," he told CBC. "It's like we were friends right away." He soon sheltered with other British and Canadian veterans inside a renovated home. And in the days that followed, he found himself grabbing anti-tank missiles in a warehouse, stocking up on oil and fuel, made a couple cocktails, and buying amateur drones to help with surveillance. He told the publication that Russia's unique style of warfare levels cities with extensive cannon artillery fire before bringing in infantry ground troops. Consequently, he said he'd have to brush up on how to shoot down a chopper or a tank. And he also said he's not very keen on the idea of shooting Russians, according to The Guardian. As Christians and Europeans, he said he felt a certain affinity for Russians, saying, "I don't hate them." Now, I'm going to press pause right there, because that's pretty interesting. And that's not something you hear. A killer, a trained killer, knows how to kill. But to have empathy when you're doing a job based out of virtue that you volunteer for, that's something unique. Those are the very virtues that we're fighting for. We have freedoms so that we can live a certain way. We don't just have freedom for the sake of having freedom. There's a big why and there's a big how behind it. And Wally is being an exemplar, an example of what it looks like to live out a pure and a clear belief system. Hatred is a thing that kills us. If we embody hatred, we deceive ourselves and we become like the enemies that we fear or fight. So in his case, for him to leave his family and go abroad, to make that decision as an individual is a remarkable one, because it reminds us, even though the head of Russia is evil, even though the leadership of Zelensky is unclear and murky, the people that live in these countries still deserve empathy. To be clear, again, evil is evil. I'm not saying we shouldn't look aside. I'm saying see it clearly. So this encouraging story brought me back to courage, how it was described by Melinda Gates. She said it was fully being able to use her voice, helping other people to fully express their voice. That's how she defines it. It made me think of another quote, one by G.K. Chesterton. He talks about courage as almost a contradiction in terms, because it actually means having a strong desire to live, taking the form of a readiness to die. That's what we see in Wally's example. And that's how I want to encourage you to live out your lives. We are wasting our time if we're just pointing fingers at the left, and that's all we're doing. We're wasting time if we just live into fear ourselves, whether that fear-mongering comes through COVID, through global crises, through the unknown, the economic uncertainty. Things will go crazy on in the world. We'll always feel like the world is ending, but the truth is that history repeats itself. And that having courage, choosing to live into courage, is critical, because you can't have all the other virtues without courage. It precipitates the others. So to live into truth, courage, and hope, that means looking at what's going on differently, not being afraid to ask the questions other people won't ask, and not being satisfied with what the global elites, the Biden administration, the monopolies from the media are all telling us. So today, be strong and courageous.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.